We be live. Hello, everybody. I'm here with Rivka. Hi, Rivka.
Hi, everybody.
Hey. So, Rivka, thank you so much for being here. And Rivka sent me a couple of clips that she wanted us to review, and they're very interesting. Oh, I see people in the live chat, people saying hello. So, hi, guys. Hi, Dr. Hypnose. Atheist Damien, Bull McCloud, Space Leah, and I see Shahrad. Hi, everyone. Oh, hello from Iran. Shahrad is watching from Iran. Okay, so, Rivka, what are these videos that you've sent me? First of all, explain to me the general theme of the videos that you sent me, and then explain the first one, the context of the first one that we're watching.
Excuse me. So these are three videos where there are two Arabs, one Arab Israeli, talking about how Hamas has been destructive and the destruction mm-hmm. that Hamas has caused. Hey, Roy. And the issues that they faced as Arabs or that they uniquely understand about the issues and the problems with the Hamas. This first one on the screen, this woman is an Arab Israeli Muslim, and she is discussing not just the Hamas, but Israel itself and why she's, you know,
Muslim or Christian?
This woman, Salma, Muslim. We have another woman coming up later who's a Copt Christian.
Arab Christian.
From Egypt. And all she right. actually talks way, about Zionism, yeah. too, and why she supports it.
Yes. By the way, guys, please like the stream. Again, these are the voices that a lot of people don't hear of. So if you like the stream right now, more people will end up seeing the stream and more people will be aware of the narratives that a lot of people are not aware of. So please help us do that. Please help us get this to in front of more eyeballs. Okay, so let's see what she's saying.
Israel left Gaza in 2005, meaning in 2005 there was no Jew alive or dead in Gaza. They even took the graves with them. It was ethnical cleansing of the Jews. Thousands of families forcefully uprooted from Gaza. And it was a test case for self-governing Gaza. Here, Gaza, we give you the keys to the greenhouses. We're leaving everything. You're free. Become a state. And the sentiment in Israel during that time, I remember it because I was 15 back then, was a lot of hope. That now Gaza is going to become the Singapore of the Middle East. I mean, we're talking about the high-rises buildings that you saw that Gaza has. But what actually happened is that Hamas burned all the greenhouses, not giving the Palestinians the opportunity of economic prosperity. And then they got elected a few months later in democratic elections to become the sovereign government of Gaza. And once they got elected, they killed everyone who didn't agree with them.
All right. So what do you think about what she said?
I do think she's correct in saying Israel left. They disinterred graves even to repatriate the Jewish graves back to Israel. They did leave greenhouses. A lot of that infrastructure was either burned or looted to use for either the Hamas or for weaponry. And that they did kill all their opposition. Everyone keeps saying the Singapore of the Middle East. Like, I don't know. That's a metaphor, I think. I'm not sure that that is actually true. But Gaza does have beaches. They do have, you know, some infrastructure. They do have, in some places, really, or they used to before the war, very nice, fancy buildings, restaurants, you know, things like that. So, but I think what is important that she's talking about is this feeling of hope, this attempt to try to do something different and then what happened. And it's also important to remember, so they were elected in 2006. Well, there hasn't been an election since. So they haven't allowed an election and neither has there been in the West Bank. I think Abbas is, you know, 17 or something years into his 4-year term. So there haven't been elections. So there haven't there hasn't been a chance really for people to choose a different government. Now they're under this sort of draconian authority of the Hamas. And a good portion of the people who are living in Gaza today weren't even alive when the Hamas was elected. And I agree with her in the fact that, you know, there was a feeling of hope. I remember, you know, right. People thinking, okay, so, what's going to happen now? Maybe something good.
I remember when I first saw, I was a kid, when I first saw videos of the Israeli military moving Jews out of Gaza by force. And I could not comprehend what the hell I was saying, because in Iran, we are constantly told that Israeli military is so abusive to Palestinians in favor of Jews. And, you know, I was watching, I don't know what it was. I think I was watching it on BBC, because by that point in Iran, we had satellite TV. And so we were exposed to news that was not from the government approved media. Right. Mm-hmm. I was watching footage. I don't know exactly where, from Israeli soldiers moving by force Jewish people who are so upset, crying and resisting being moved out of Gaza. I'm like, they're doing this to Jewish people? I'm like, what the hell? Like, they're supposed to be mean. They're supposed to be abusive to Muslims and Arabs. And I didn't, that was like, it blew my mind to even watch that on TV, that they're doing that. I would never forget that the Israeli military was doing that. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, they did. They had to use force with some people, and some people resisted them with force. And right. People were right. upset. People were like, this is our home. And they're like, look, this is something we've decided as a country. You either abide by the decision of this democratic country, or we're going to physically force you to abide by the decision. And it actually, I think, opened some people's eyes about that, is that Israel really did leave. And I think, unfortunately, for some people now, they're like, see, look, we shouldn't have done that. Look what happened. We told you, kind of thing. I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think you can't live your life. You have to try. And it was a good sense of hope. But I also remember the crushing feeling when they elected the Hamas, you know, this feeling like, oh, so we had this hope that something was going to happen and it was going to be positive and people were going to want to govern themselves. And instead we got an Islamist terror organization.
Yeah. Yeah, but we also got apartheid in Gaza, like actual apartheid.
Because a lot of people
act like, a lot of people act like Israel is an apartheid. And whenever we want to evaluate that, I'm like, where? In Israel itself, or in the West Bank, or in Gaza? And every time we analyze this, we realize that Israel is not doing apartheid. Like, I mean, you could challenge me on that. But there's only one place that in these three places that apartheid is actually taking place, which is in Gaza, but not by Israel. It's by Hamas. I mean, there's no Jews allowed. There are no Jews allowed in Gaza. If you're a Jew in Gaza, you're not going to have a very good time, right? You're not going to have equal rights. You're not going to be treated well.
We had a case like that in 2014 where these kids made a wrong turn. I believe it was 2014. Made a wrong turn and they ended up, I believe it was in Gaza. I could be wrong. Maybe it was in the West, but I think it was. And they end up being murdered. So just for making a wrong turn. And also, it's important to remember the way religious minorities are treated in Gaza, which is very, very poorly. And the way LGBT people are treated, the way non-believers are treated, anyone who disagrees with the Hamas, anyone who challenges them. There's all kinds of rules, regulations, either on the books, so to speak, or laissez-faire regulations, which prevent all kinds of different people from participating in society. So yeah, definitely an apartheid-like regime.
So 2 points. First of all, we've been demonetized already right now, 10 minutes into the show. So guys, please keep bringing in the super chats. Thank you so much, Noman, for the super chat saying, hello, Rivka, nice seeing you here. And hey, Armin. Hey, Noman, thank you so much for the super chat. Guys, we do need the super chats for us to continue live streams like this. Again, you see, like, we haven't even started the show and YouTube has demonetized us. We didn't say anything wrong or anything that violates the community guidelines. So I'm going to request a review. But even if I tell everybody every time we request a review that it's going to take a couple of days for them to review this and maybe give the monetization for the stream back. But by then, most of the people who watch the stream have already watched it. So again, we do need the support. So please go ahead and do that. And also, actually, if you don't want to use the super chat, just make sure you like the stream. At least do that, because that also really helps. So it's interesting. So every time tells you that there's apartheid in that area, just make sure that you tell them that they're correct. There is an apartheid. Why don't people mention that the apartheid is happening by Hamas? Even if people agree that, believe that Israel is doing apartheid, by that standard, Hamas is definitely doing apartheid. So I don't think Israel is doing apartheid, but if you think they are, why are you not mentioning the other one? Like, why are you not mentioning there's at least two apartheids happening? Why are you not mentioning that Hamas is doing also apartheid? Because it clearly is. And also, Zaid in the live chat is also mentioning, let us not forget that apartheid against Palestinians in other Arab countries. Like, yes, there's apartheid against Palestinians in Lebanon. Yeah, go on, Rivka.
Very good point. Thanks for bringing that up, Zaid. Yeah, and that's something that definitely bears mentioning, you know, how Palestinians are treated in Lebanon, how they're not allowed to work in certain industries, they're not allowed to live in certain places, they're forced to be in refugee camps, they're not given citizenship. And then there's other countries that do treat Palestinians quite poorly. So basically apartheid, particularly, like, I know more about Lebanon than other places, but yeah, it's definitely a situation like that. But I think why, Armin, is that it fits the narrative to have Israel be the bad guy and everybody else is just suffering underneath their boot. So it doesn't help them to talk about the reality on the ground. What they need for their narrative, it has to be Israel's the worst. Or the other alternative is people say, yeah, but anything bad happening in the Gaza or West Bank or anywhere else is because Israel is so terrible, people acted like this and they were forced into this type of behavior, which I think is really disrespectful and bigoted. You're saying that you think that Palestinians are too ignorant or too savage to act appropriately. I mean, come on. That's a bullshit. That's a BS argument.
Why doesn't it not work the other way around? Like, let's say, for example, you know what? Yeah, Hamas is doing something wrong, blah, blah, blah. But again, given the conditions that Israel put them in, it's only natural for them to behave like this. Like, people say that all the time, right? Like, well, if you want to use that line of reasoning, then whatever crimes you claim that Israel is committing, given that this is a country that from its very foundation, it was constantly attacked by its Arab neighbors from day one as a birthday gift, right? Then it would be only natural. Like, if you want to go there, then I could say, well, it would be only natural for it to do whatever it's doing. Like, if you want to excuse that with the same standards, I could also excuse everything that Israel might be doing.
I think that's a really rational point, but I think that the fact that it doesn't happen shows you the nature often of anti-Semitism is it is right. Whatever anybody wants it to be, right? Jews right. are super smart in controlling the world, but they're also evil and not smart enough to stop our, you know, terrorist Jews, they hate Jews because they were poor, then they hated Jews because they were rich, and they hated Jews because they were stateless. Now they hate Jews because they have a state. You know, they weren't allowed to work in some industries because they hated them. Then they form their own industries. For example, Hollywood, now they hate them because it's an industry that Jews formed. So anti-Semitism is so amorphous, and you can't ever use a rational mindset to say, well, if one side is treated so badly and they act inappropriately, if the other side is treated badly, then they obviously would act inappropriately too, according to this logic, but that's not the case.
Right. So we got a super chat by Sean from Canada. Thank you so much, saying, I don't have any shekels, so here's some loonies. By the way, loonies are what Canadians call their money. And then saying, also, it's my birthday. Well, happy birthday. Thanks for defending Israel. Well, you're welcome. And yeah, thank you. But don't worry about it not being shekels. Everything that we receive here on Atheist Republic, we will be converting them to shekels, okay? So don't worry about that. But thank you so much. But if you do send us shekels, that will save us some conversion fees. So I'm just kidding. This guy in the live chat, which I don't know how to pronounce his or her name, saying, Hamas is bad, dude, but they are nothing compared to Israel. You defend the worser one because you're biased. Well, I mean, I am biased in favor of liberalism and against terrorism. That is true. I am biased. But if you want to say that Israel is worse, you have to make a case for it, actually, rather than just saying that. Because to me, it seems like the people who go and try to target civilians, including children, are probably worse than the people who are trying to attack terrorists and they're trying to avoid killing civilians, but they end up killing civilians not because they were trying to, but because they couldn't figure out a way to kill the terrorists without civilian casualties. I would think that the people who are on purpose targeting civilians would be worse. That is my standards. But if you disagree, well, then I would like to know where you're getting your standards from and how do you think that's a better standard. Let's look at the second video that Rivka sent us.
Because how many...
Let's go from the beginning.
Okay, so this is Maryam Wahaba, and she is an Egyptian Coptic Christian. I believe she lives in the United States now. She does a show or a podcast, I'm not exactly sure which it is, or maybe it's both, with a Jewish woman whose name is Devora, I think. Anyways, the two of them do a podcast together, and they discuss all kinds of things. But this came from one of their discussions between the two of them. Their podcast is called American-ish. This is her talking about her impressions of, you know, Islamism and the Hamas. And
right. Okay. So let's listen to what she has to say.
Gazans know this too, because how many times have we seen videos of Gazans trying to tell the world that we are being held hostage, that Gazans are being held hostage by Hamas? Hamas leadership is worth $3, $4, or $5 billion each, while Gazans suffer in poverty and suffer without basic infrastructure and suffer without a basic governing body.
How much of that do you think is on purpose? Like, how much? Like, because Hamas and a whole bunch of other people that act like they're pro-Palestinian actually benefit so much from the suffering of Palestinian people. Like, it has become, it has turned into an industry, going around the world and showing how bad the situation in Gaza is and getting funding from it and getting political capital from it. It has become an industry. So if Gazans' situations improve, a lot of the excuses for these actors to either raise money or for their military intervention, you know, especially from the Islamic Republic of Iran, a lot of it would go away. So they are very much invested in the suffering of Palestinian people while they're acting like they're defending them. But go on.
That's exactly right. Several people have said, including, you know, Mohsen Hassan Youssef, whose father was one of the people who started Hamas, said, and I have said this too myself, is that I think that a lot of the leadership of the Hamas view Palestinians as income. And right. in my opinion is they trade in their blood. That's the trade. And yes, you're exactly right. I mean, a lot of this is, and you'll see in the next video, he alludes to it a little bit, but I think that that's part of this whole cycle, right? Is that they do some action, Israel responds, innocent civilians die because the Hamas is hiding underground and using them as human shields. And then they can say, look, you killed all these civilians. You need to send us more money. You need to send us more aid. You need to send us this, 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 this. And look how terrible Israel is, because people forget. I mean, people have forgotten the 7th of October. I've been hearing tons of people all over the socials and even in media and on the ground in some videos from Gaza, where they're saying when they started this war on October 7th, Israel didn't even respond for a couple weeks. They were attacked, but everyone's viewing it from the 7th of October. And that's one point. And then the other point is what I find really almost, you know, unbelievable to me is that what we just said is that, you know, they're using them as human shields. They use them for income. If you go, you can see on Arabic channels in Arabic, the Hamas leaders saying that. Hania just saw a video where he was saying, you know, when you give us aid, it's not for assistance. It's for jihad. It's jihad assistance. There was another Palestinian. I can't remember the guy with the smudge on his forehead from, you know, praying. I can't remember the raisin. I can't remember his name. Saying that we will, you know, do October 7th a million times, and that we love the blood of our martyrs. We depend on this. We raise people to be martyrs. Then there's more videos where they're saying the people of the Palestinians in Gaza, oh, 75% of them are refugees and they're not our responsibility. We're not responsible for them. When asked, why are you not building bomb shelters? Why are you not? And they're like, well, because it's not our responsibility. So they've washed their hands of them. They talk about them being a source of income. They talk about them being raised basically to die so that the Hamas can get more money, and how that they don't view them as their own responsibility, even though they're actually the governing body in Gaza. So it's absolutely the case. It's an industry. And unfortunately, it trades in Palestinian blood. And Jewish blood, Israeli blood, and all kinds of others.
Yes. So that's from the supposed leaders of people in Gaza, but also from many Muslims around the world. You could hear imams and Dawah boys and Islamic YouTube channels. You could see this in the mosques, imams saying this, like you see Muhammad Hijab saying this. They constantly say that, you know, they're jealous of people in Gaza, that they are victorious even if they die, that they are in the best situation possible. Like, they are so transparent about thinking that the people in Gaza are lucky to be in the situation they are, right? That this is the best anybody could hope for. This is the situation that they're in, because they could be martyrs. They're suffering for the cause of Islam. Their suffering is uniting the Muslim world together. So we're not saying this because this is not our interpretation. This is them saying these things transparently. They completely are transparent about it. So, and also they are involved in brainwashing a lot of people in Gaza, constantly are told by the Islamic world that they need to fight, you will constantly be supported. Like, imagine if you have lost, you're living in poverty, right? You're living in, you don't have safety. And the only thing that you have emotionally that makes you feel strong and makes you feel some sort of comfort is the people that are paying attention to you and that act like they're sympathizing with you. And those are the people that are telling you that, oh, yes, keep fighting. You will be victorious. And thinking that they have the best intentions for you, but actually not knowing that they're profiting off of you suffering and continuing to fight and giving you false hope about what is the end of, you know, that there's victory for you at the end of this fight. Go on, Rivka.
That's a really, really good point. I think that the false hope thing is one thing, unfortunately, a lot of Palestinians have suffered under incompetent or inept leadership that is constantly promising them things that they can't deliver. Time doesn't go backwards, you know? And so that's one thing. The other thing is, to your point about the rest of the Ummah or the Muslim world or the Arab world, even if they're not Muslim, you know, saying, oh, we'll support you. You guys are, you know, you're in this great position to fight and represent, you know, Islam. But if you notice, when it actually comes time to support most of these folks, they're not there. And I feel like
prayers, though.
Other than prayers, I feel like other than their concern for Palestinians is often only important when it can be used as a cudgel against Israel. When they're actually have to support them or do something, then other than prayers, then it, you know, then they're not there. They're not there at all.
Right.
And it's pretty interesting, other than to send money like, you know, Qatar, but knowing that that money isn't going to those people. I mean, it's known. The Hamas tells you. And that's one thing I just want to say, and then I'll drop this, is that I find it incomprehensible that particularly people in the West, on the left, who, if someone commits some other kind of, you know, bias crime, like, for example, the guy who went into the African-American church and killed those people, and he said it's because they're Black, everyone believed him. Yes, that must be the case, because it was the case. But when the Hamas and these terrorists tell you exactly why they're doing what they're doing, what their reasoning is, how they actually don't really care about these people, they need them for money. People keep in the, a lot of these wokistanis are just like, oh, no, 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 that's not the case. That's not really true. It's really Israel or the Jews. So I just find it very interesting. And I think that's just sort of part of this whole narrative.
Right. So we got two super chats. Let me just read those first. Seed of Iblis saying, oh, this is a quote by Martin Luther King Jr.
Good job. I was going to bring it up. It's MLK Day.
I didn't believe this. I had to go look it up before reading it just to make sure that this is not a quote that has been misattributed. And it's real. I'm surprised. Thank you for educating me. Seed of Iblis, quoting Martin Luther King Jr., saying Israel must exist and has the right to exist and is one of the great outposts of democracy in the world. Really? I mean, I'm looking at this on, you know, ask online, and it seemed like Martin Luther King was a major supporter of Israel. Thank you
he
so
was.
Much.
He was. He also was a Zionist. He says anti-Zionism is, he says something about being against Zionism is anti-Semitic. And this is something I want to bring up just to say there is a huge amount of support if you go out there and look amongst the Black community with the Jewish community, particularly right. At this time. I see a lot of it. And today is Dr. King Day in the United States. So I'm glad that Seed of Iblis brought this up, because I was going to bring it up at the end. And I'm grateful that they did.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. I'm going to go post this because of you, Seed of Iblis. I'm going to go post this quote everywhere on my social media. So there's that. Thank you. Andrew just gave us his first super chat to us, 666. Thank you, $6.66, saying long time listener, much love from Colombia. Well, thank you so much for that. Thank you so much for the super chat. So Rivka, you mentioned like infrastructure and Hamas not investing in Gaza and just not taking responsibility for taking care of people in Gaza, and them admitting, openly admitting. I saw that video as well that you're referring to, that like, yeah, this is not our responsibility. It seems like their government that is just meant to just fight Israel and not take care of its people. But I remember when Israel, right on October 7th, in response when Israel shut down water to Gaza, a lot of people came out and were like, oh my God, how dare you? This is so disgusting behavior, shutting down water to Palestinians. At first I also thought like, okay, that's like a weird response, like civilians not having water, that's not good. And I didn't know that this is the water that Israel gifts for free to Gaza. So people don't mention that the reason why Gaza has any water is because Israel provides them with free water, because not only Hamas does not provide Gazans with water, they actually go and remove water pipes to build missiles with them. And also that cutting of, and this is so bizarre, by the way, like this is, seems like a cartoon villain. Like, you know, that your enemy is actually providing free water to your civilians and you
and
are
electricity.
The ones that you take. And electricity, yes. And, you know, I mean, they did cut it for a very short amount of time, and it was not all the water, but it was a short amount of time. It's weird to expect. I mean, that's the water and electricity that Hamas uses for its war machine. So right after the greatest attack on your country, shutting down the water and electricity for just like, you know, 2 days, I think, not, and even not all of it, just so that the your enemy that just attacked you and you don't know what else is going about to happen, if there's going to be a second wave, at the point that you're at the weakest, just providing free electricity and water to the an area which eventually will be used by the same people that just attacked you, it seemed like insane. I mean, it seemed justified for them to cut it for just a short amount of time to just see what the hell is going on, and not, I mean, the tunnels that were being used were being, the electricity in the tunnels was the electricity that Israel is providing to Gaza for free. So just cutting that for a while made sense to me after I looked into what happened, especially that given that that's a gift by Israel to Gaza. But go on.
Yeah, Israel has so much advanced technology in terms of water desalination and drip irrigation and all these things that Israel has a surplus of water, and they're able to give it to Gazans for free, and the and everywhere else in the Arab world they have to pay for their own water and electricity, but right. The Gazans don't, or at least not the majority of it. And so I find it just, it's almost laughable that you have people saying, oh, look, they're so terrible, but they give their, the people right on the other side whose stated aim is their annihilation, Israel is still giving them water, giving them electricity. And indeed, they are using a lot of those water pipes. One of the, there was a guy in one of the kibbutzim, I'm sorry, I don't remember, his daughter was actually killed by the Hamas on the 7th of October. This guy was part of a water plan into Gaza where he had come up with a way to do something different. I don't remember what it was. This was unfortunately 100 days ago, that to bring water in. And so he got these pipes. And I believe Benny Gantz, who is one of the ministers, actually signed off on this project. They were bringing water. They brought the water with the pipes. And immediately these pipes were dismantled and turned into homemade rockets. But he said, well, I'm going to keep trying because there are people who are suffering. So, yeah. And that's another reason why a lot of Gazan civilians are killed, is because of these homemade rockets that they use water pipes and other things for. Then they throw those rockets and they say up to a quarter of them fail and fall back into Gaza and kill Palestinian civilians. Most of the time, they are thrown from civilian areas next to schools, next to hospitals, next to homes. So the civilian casualties often in these situations are from their own attempts to kill Israeli civilians. And let's not forget, Hamas is still throwing rockets at Israel right now. Those same rockets that they could be using the water pipes to bring water to their own people.
Right, right, right. Roy just gave us 6 shekels, and he's claiming that we just got rich because every shekel is more than $12,000. I didn't know that's how the conversion is. Well, then we're like, we could just shut it down and go now. We just made it, Rivka. But thank you so much, Roy, for the shekels.
Don't tell everybody.
Yes, yeah. But guys, send us more shekels. Shekels that we don't have to. Given that we're Zionists, you know, everything that we do here is in shekels. So if you send us shekels, that will save us the conversion fee. So thank you so much for that, Roy. I'm just kidding. Zay is saying even if they cut the water, they give it for free and they're not obligated to. Yeah, and also that's not the water that they cut is not all the water that Gaza has. Like they have other sources of water and electricity. So people acted like it was completely shut for a while. But go on, Rivka.
Yeah, and I mean that's just, you know, something fact that people don't realize. And also, I mean, just to bring it up and not to compare Israel with this country, but I believe it was 2017 or 2018, the Saudis completely disallowed any humanitarian aid, food, anything to come into Yemen purposefully to starve people. And a lot of those Yemenis weren't throwing rockets. They're just civilians. They're not using free water that Saudi was giving them to turn around and turn it into rockets. And I don't remember the outrage on that one. I mean, on this channel, yes, but, so my point is it doesn't matter what Israel does or doesn't do. At least that's the impression often right. I get, you know, they could give free water and people will say, yeah, but you're big, bad Israel. They deserve to get anything from you. Or if you cut some of the water so that the terrorists aren't using it or electricity to power the terror tunnels, then they say, oh, you're a terrible human being. You have no compassion. You don't care about people. So right. I think this situation is really important for people to understand the position Israel is put in constantly. You know, damned if you do and damned if you don't. And no matter what you do, it's going to be wrong for someone. And I also want to say, what other country gives water and electricity for free on a daily basis to a group of people who have sworn to annihilate you? Not very many, you know?
Right, right. So let's watch the third video. I have some other points to make, but I want to watch the third video first. Can you give us some context for this one?
There isn't a whole lot of context, but this guy is, he says he's from Gaza. He says he's Palestinian. And he is talking about just the money, especially that the media is making off of this situation and how the media is kind of hyping things up and making the situation worse. Now, I don't know. It looks like he's not a Hamas supporter from the context of the video. I don't know that he's pro-Israel or anything like that, but I do think it's important because it shows an average person calling out some of this hypocrisy, some of the money that people are making, not just the Hamas, but a lot of these media, in particular, he says Jazeera. From Qatar, who funds Hamas.
So he's not speaking in English. So, but because this is also going to be in podcast format, I'm going to read the translation. So a lot of people, when I read the translation, people say like, we can see it on the screen, Armin. Why are you reading it? Well, because a lot of people are just listening and not watching the video. So he's basically, apparently this man is making this video as a response to something on Al Jazeera Arabic, right? So this is what he's saying, are you with Palestine? And the Palestinians? Or with Hamas? Oh, so he's making like, which one are you with? Are you with Palestinians or with your Hamas? You can't be with both. I have a message. for the Al Jazeera channel. As a Gazan and Palestinian who isn't fooled anymore, a message to Faiz Al-Duiri, who is this guy? Is this somebody who works at Al Jazeera?
I'm Googling him if he's like the CEO of Jazeera or something. I'm Googling
Al Jazeera
right
or something. I'm just assuming somebody that works in Al Jazeera. And Al Jazeera channel. Al Jazeera channel works for the benefit of Palestine and the Palestinians or Hamas. So again, that guy's name. What victories are you talking about? So I'm assuming it's a reporter on Al Jazeera Arabic. So I think that's a reporter on Al Jazeera Arabic that talks about it, was talking about the victories of the Hamas against Israelis. So that's what got him angry. Because this guy knows what he's talking about. Because a lot of Arab media, unfortunately, is celebrating every single achievement by Hamas soldiers as if they have the upper hand because they are winning against Israelis. And this encourages them to continue to fight. So it's like, what victories are... So this man is saying, what victories are you talking about? What tank are you talking about? So I'm assuming there was a tank, Israeli tank, that they managed to blow up, and they're just celebrating that as a victory against Israel. So he's saying, what tank are you talking about? You're naive. You're a fool. You are mentally ill, Faiz. Again, not my words. No insult to mentally ill people. Okay, so this is just this. He says, you say they blew up a tank. The tank. And I am shocked. I'm shocked they blew up a tank. A little boy can blow up a tank. People here are being killed. People are dying. What are you marketing? You're looking to be famous? You're looking for money? You know, if the war ends tomorrow and Hamas is destroyed, you know very well your job is over. No money. You do business at the expense of our blood and lives. That is so right on mark, like so on point. That's exactly what we're talking about. That's exactly when we're telling you they are trying to celebrate victories. They're trying to celebrate as if they're winning, as if there's a chance. So you could have so many of your houses destroyed, so many of your loved ones killed, all your infrastructure up in the air, your future, all hope taken away from you, and you blew up a tank, and people want to highlight that to give you hope to continue fighting because you managed to blow up a tank. Again, this is the false hope marketing that we're talking about because they are so invested in making the Palestinians feel like there's a way out of this with war because they're invested in this war. The same people that ask you for ceasefire, it's a one-sided request, a ceasefire from Israel, because they are the same people who encourage Palestinians to continue to fight because they are profiting from this war. They are so evil, Rivka, like the level of evil, people profiting, and they act like they are the better ones. They act like they're pro-Palestinian. They act like they're standing up for evil while they're making money out of Palestinian blood. It's so evil. I can't even describe how evil all of this is.
It's nauseating. It's really... And don't forget, it's not just Jazeera profiting. Jazeera is owned by Qatar, who sends huge amounts of money to the Hamas. So they're like the mafia or a drug cartel, right? So they're sending money to create more infrastructure for the Hamas and tunnels and supporting them. And then when they kill people or other, then they can say, or people die, they can go, look how terrible it is. You need to cease fire so we can send you more money so you can rearm, so you can start the whole cycle again. You know, it's that they're bringing in the stuff and they're sending it out, like, you know, the mafia, you know, bringing in illegal things, but then also, you know, paying off police. And, you know, there's like a mafia, and they also, the Hamas operates like a drug cartel too, in the fact that they coerce people into doing things. And that's something that some people don't know. Some people may actually be supportive of them. Some people may actually be supportive of violence, but there's tons of people who are forced into these things because, like a drug cartel, they say, you know, do what we say, or we're going to hurt people you love.
Right.
You know?
You know? Yeah. You know, Rivka, I'm from Iran, right? So I grew up in Iran, and I've been to elementary school and high school in Iran. And the reason why I know how big of an industry this acting like you're pro-Palestinian and being actually anti-Israeli is because I've seen how invested my government, you know, Iran, the Iranian government is in all of this. But because I've been in, you know, in Iran, you can see, you know, on annual events that they act like they're supporting Palestine. The entire country turns into pro-Palestinians. We have chants, we have musicals, we have so many, we have protests against Israel all over Iran, and they're constantly through education, through media, through all of these events, through songs. You see how the Iranian government makes acts like it's its responsibility to defend the Palestinian people. And we grew up with that mindset, as if like, yeah, this is the main intention of this country. And with that mindset that we grew up with, the Iranian government tries to justify to its own people why it needs to go and spend its resources that it's supposed to use for its citizens in other places. Like the reason all of the... So see how profitable this anti-Israeli narrative is for the Islamic government in Iran is because it has to find an excuse to be in Lebanon, for it to be in Syria, for it to be in Yemen, for it to be in Iraq, for it to be everywhere and spend so much of Iranian resources everywhere else supporting terrorism in the region. And it needs some level of support in Iran. And to get that, because even though it's a dictatorship, even dictators require some level of support to be able to do the things that they're doing. And to be able to sell that to the people, to at least some percentage of the people in Iran, it has to use the suffering of the Palestinians as an excuse, right? So just remember, if Palestinians ever overcome all of this misery and have a good, end up having peace and stability and prosperity, the people that will be upset the most are the people who wave around the flag of Palestine, right? Because that it will be the end of all of them. Remember, if more Iranian people are now supporting Israel than ever before. And this is so dangerous for the Islamic Republic of Iran. The Islamic Republic of Iran needs the suffering of Palestinians for at least some Iranians to support what it's doing everywhere else. And the Iranian government is mostly, everything it does, it's focused outside of its borders. Its main intention is to exert influence as an imperialist Shia, force around the region. With the excuse of the suffering of the Palestinian people, you take that away from the Islamic Republic, you have taken a main part of its ideology, and it's one of its main excuse for it to even be in power. So just wanted to know, as an Iranian, I've seen that, so I know what I'm talking about. But go on, Rivka.
That's interesting that you bring that up, because if we go back to the very first video where the Arab Israeli, her name's Salma, I can't remember her last name, was talking about how this hope that Gaza was going to, you know, flourish and that they would have more freedoms and it was going to be this great thing. If you look at that, you realize, oh, if that happens, then lots of people are not gaining something from that. The leadership of the Hamas isn't making money. The Iranians are losing what they perceive to be their influence, although they at that time they weren't funding the Hamas. Qataris are, you know, not having some fodder for their news channel. You know, all of a sudden, if there's a peaceful, successful, prospering Gaza, then all these actors who make money off of this suffering, who that's their business, right? They trade in blood. All of a sudden, where their funds are dried up. So it's almost as if they have to keep it going, you know, in order to keep the money flowing. And one other thing that I wanted to bring up, and it's just an aside point, and we can talk about it later, is that it's not... I do have to say also this, their funding to get support for this weird narrative that they've got going about, you know, how bad they're doing, even though they're keeping them in, you know, the gutter, is Qatar is funding lots of United States universities. And they've been giving millions and millions of dollars to them. And we see, in, at least in my opinion, not a direct, you know, cause, but it's a correlation between all these people in the West, in the US, at a lot of these elite universities who are buying this narrative that, you know, the Palestinians are suffering. Gaza is, you know, basically, you know, Bergen-Belsen, which isn't true. And they are not just doing this in the Arab world or in the Muslim world. They've now expanded it out into the West. And unfortunately, they've been pretty successful at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, just like Rivka, I think you might agree with me, correct me if you don't. Just like I often say, for you to be properly pro-Israel, you have to be anti-Netanyahu. And you have to be anti-Likud to be a proper pro-Israeli, especially because Netanyahu is responsible for funding Hamas. So we're not hypocrites. We also notice that, and we also condemn that, among many other things. You know, part of supporting Israel requires you, I think, for you to be anti the Likud and anti-Netanyahu. But in the same way, to be properly and promoting to be pro-Israel, you have to be pro the prosperity and safety of the Palestinian people, because there's nothing that disarms the enemies of Israel more than the peace, stability, and prosperity of Palestinian people. So it's interesting that so many people think that because we're pro-Israel, we're anti-Palestinian, when... given that our philosophy thinks that in order to save Israel, you need to save Palestinians from the hands of its actual enemies, their actual enemies, which is the Islamic Republic of Iran and all other actors who are using their blood as a way to be anti-Jewish, including, unfortunately, many, many Western so-called progressives, which are actually regressives, but they call themselves progressives. Yeah.
Well, I think that even if you were not a person who was super compassionate for the life of Israelis of Palestinians, it is utilitarian. It's smart to want to have stability on your borders. If you have instability on your border, it's only going to come back on you. If you have people who are committing terrorist attacks, if you have all kinds of disruption and instability. And I do think at least in my opinion, is that Palestinians do deserve to live in peace and stability, just like Israelis. Just like Israelis. And also, this thing that's happening with the Hamas and the massacre and then Israel responding and then, you know, potentially stuff with Hezbollah, it's I think, a purposeful thing to upset the world order on the part of, you know, the bad actors in the Hamas, in Iran, Russia, all these people that are funding these things, you know. And unfortunately, they are finding really good allies with a lot of these, you know, I call them Wokistani Mahajideen, because they...
I love that, yeah.
Yeah, they're from Wokadishu. Because they have found allies in Western countries who are willing to also want to destabilize the world order, who want to create chaos, who think that this is the way that change is made. So yes, you definitely want to have your neighbors stable as so you can be a stable country. And yeah, as far as like Likud and things like that, I am personally really not happy with the religiosity and the overtones of all of that. I find it, in my understanding of what I grew up with Israel to be. But I also like to point out that Israel is a country just like any other country. And that's something that needs to be really made clear, is people want to make them some sort of special badness or some sort of special, their country. They go through ups and downs. They have good politicians. They make mistakes. People, and just like your argument in the beginning about, you know, Gazans suffering, Israelis have been suffering under not just terrorist attacks, but this threat from everybody around them for 75 years. So, you know, having stable neighbors has always been, hopefully, the goal. And if you read the founding documents, that's what it says, that we extend our hand to all our neighbors who want to live in peace and security. So, okay, yeah.
So I want to make a point, but let me just mentioned Sean just became a new member. Thank you so much, guys. As you know, that we this stream has been demonetized. Go figure out why. So people becoming members and using the super chat really, really does help us. So thank you for that. And all callers also just gave us a super chat. Thank you so much for that. 10 euros from all callers saying pro Hamas bigots conflate national Judaism, which is Israeli far right, aka. Oh, yeah. Smotrich. Yeah. One of the that's the leader of one of the two far right parties right now in power. So they conflate that with Zionism, which at its inception, you know, with Herzl, was left wing and socialist. Yeah. And it was it was non-religious. And then so I'm going to add this to it as well. It was mainly the religious Jews who were disagreeing with it, because they thought that they had to wait for the Messiah to come back before Israel could be, Jews could go back to Israel. So, yeah, it was, by its foundation, Zionism was secular. But go on, Rivka.
My own great-grandfather, he wasn't anti-Israel, but my mother told me about a conversation that he had where he felt conflicted because he was a religious Jew, saying, you know, that he understands the needs. He said, but you have to wait for the Mashiach, for the Messiah. And he was concerned that being supportive of Israel would be to preempt God. And who is this poor, you know, who am I to preempt God? I'm just the guy from Brooklyn, you know. But so that was actually a discussion in my family's household, is that my grandfather, great grandfather, was concerned that he was doing something because no Mashiach. He ended up overriding that concern. But yeah, it was definitely a secular
to begin with.
Movement. Yeah. And it's just about self-determination for Jews. So if you believe Palestinians should have self-determination, then Jews should have self-determination.
Zionism, here's how I think about it. Zionism is just Israeli nationalism. And just like other forms, other countries' nationalisms, we have good versions of them and bad versions of them, right? Other countries, they have civic nationalism, they have religious ethno-nationalism. Israel has Zionism, which is defendable, and Zionism, which is religious, Zionism, which is ethno-nationalism. There are multiple versions of Zionism, and there are many of them that I can defend, right? So it depends on which version of Zionism you're talking about. But to its core, Zionism to me means Israel has the right to exist, and that I defend. And okay, I have another point that I wanted, because we're getting close. So here's the thing. We saw, three Arabs making their points against Hamas. And also, especially with the last one, talking about how people in Gaza are being encouraged to keep on fighting. And I think this is what it all comes down to, right? There are two groups of people here. We have Israelis and Palestinians. And right now, among both of these people, and Rivka, listen to this, because tell me your views on this, because I think this is a good summary of why we have war right now and the war continues. It is that among these two people, both Israelis and Palestinians, most of them have the opinion that war continuing to fight is going to get them victory, right? And I say at least one of these two groups is wrong. One of these two groups will not be able to achieve victory with war. And among these two, I think it's the Palestinians who are wrong, right? If Israelis think that they will be able to get some sort of victory with war, they could be right. But there is no way for Palestinians to be right about this. There is no way that you're going to defeat Israel. There is no way, there is no victory for you at the end of this fight. And I think the reason why that's such a hard pill to swallow is because the mindset that defeat is weakness, and there is nothing more shameful than being defeated and being weaker. You know, I don't know if this is some sort of alpha male patriarchal culture within Islam or Arab culture or whatever, but so much has been sacrificed, so many lives and infrastructure and economic hardship has been, accepted as just a part of reality, because me strongman, me no weak, me no defeat. Like, it's just such a caveman mentality. And I think, people in Palestine need to look at what happened to Japan when they accepted defeat, when they surrendered, and they were going to continue fighting forever. But then at some point, I don't know what happened. There's something happened that made them like, okay, maybe not. Maybe we'll just accept defeat, right? And look at what happened to Japan ever since they accepted defeat. Look at what happened to Germany once they accepted defeat. I don't think accepting defeat, if you think that's a form of weakness, I mean, what do you want? Accept weakness, but then maybe after that, because you accepted that, because this is an inferiority complex, after that, maybe you can grow stronger. If you insist on being strong now by showing that you could defeat Israel, you never get to be strong ever. But if you accept that you're weak now, you are weak now. Israel is stronger than you. Maybe accepting that reality will make you one day strong, just like Germany eventually became strong, just like Japan. Why should we go all the way to Japan and Germany? Look at your neighbors. Look at their surrounding. What happened to Egypt? What happened to Jordan? Once they accepted defeat from Israel, once they accepted Israel is reality. We should stop fighting Israel. I mean, they're not the best of all countries, but they're better than you. They're better than Gaza. They're better than Gaza. I mean, look, just compare. I mean, let's not even go to Egypt and Jordan. Just compare West Bank to Gaza. Why is West Bank situation better than Gaza? they have less Hamas. I mean, is it? It's just because of that they have less Hamas. That's why you are again. But I think you get the point. But go on, Rivka. You.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of I said something not quite as articulate in that, but I said something kind of analogous to that when I said that. Excuse me. I think part of the issue for a lot of Palestinians is they've had inept, weak leadership that has sold them this imaginary dream that somehow they're going to go backwards in time and retake all of Israel and pretend that nothing that's happened in the last 75 years has happened, and they're going to magically, everyone's just going to come back, and it's going to be this fanciful idea of what the past was. And this selling of this narrative that will never happen is part of the issue. I mean, time doesn't go backwards. It goes forwards. Israel isn't going anywhere. And to your point about Egypt and Jordan, accepting Israel's right to exist, accepting Israel's right to be their neighbor has really been helpful for Israel and for Jordan and Egypt. And I think even if it's, you don't even have to consider it weakness. A lot of times it takes more strength to stop and reach your hand out to your neighbor or to look around and go, this isn't serving me. You know, how is this serving my family? How is it, you know, that's what a lot of people talk about when they talk about suffering, is that if you keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, and this is theoretical, and you're not getting the same, you're not getting different results, and you have this moment where you know, well, I don't have to do this again, but you do it anyway. There's a lot of that mental suffering, right? And I think that it also will, not only will it help Gaza, not only will it help Israel, but it'll also help the whole surrounding environment. And I don't think it's only about being weak, because if you listen to the rhetoric and you hear the things that are said in some of these education systems, and you hear even what people who are in charge of children's education or in charge of the Hamas or other people, they say that they do win by dying. And that's a real issue that you have to contend with, because for the majority of societies, if you're fighting with someone and you die, they would consider that a loss, right? And the other side doesn't. But often in this scenario, it doesn't matter whether your enemy dies or you die. It's still a win. So that is something that is more than weakness. They consider that a strength, from what I can see. And I actually have been spammed with anti-Semitic messages that say things exactly like that. You know, you'll never win because you love life and we love death. So too bad for you. It's like a point of pride. But yes, I think that if you are willing to stop and make peace and accept, because the point is, every offer, all the 5-7 different offers, every time it becomes less and less and less. So first it was 3/4 of a loaf. Then it was half a loaf. Now it's less than half a loaf. So you're not gaining anything. You're actually losing every time.
Right. So we got a lot of super chats, which I actually have opinions about. Sergu with the $2 super chat saying, overlap between Islam and toxic masculinity is near circle. Oh, you're talking about the Venn diagram. Okay. Thank you so much, Sergu, for the super chat. Appreciate that. All Colors is saying, thank you so much again for a €5 super chat saying, Islamic manipulation is nearly similar to, what is that? Darvo? I don't know what that means.
That's the World Economic Forum place that they had. from what I remember seeing it with those World Economic Forum people.
I think we're getting into some conspiracy stuff. I don't know what we're talking about here, but anyway, let's move on to this. But thank you so much. If you guys understood it, you understood it. Rivka, you don't need to, like, we don't need to get it too deep into that, but yeah. So let's go to this one.
I just want to do it for myself.
Oh, okay. I think all colors explain that in the next super chat, which we will get to. So Norse mythology is saying it's not the military strength of Israel. It's the fact that it's a democracy, it's Jewish, and it won't accept bullying from extremists. I think this is theocratic religious ideologies. I think there's a T missing here. So thank you so much for the super chat, Norse mythology. I do disagree with what you're saying, though, even though you sent a super chat. I don't think it's a democracy. I think it's liberalism, which also includes the democratic element. And I don't think it's because it's Jewish. I think it's because it's somewhat secular, right? I don't celebrate the Jewishness of Israel at all. I support the secularism of Israel. And I don't support democracy completely. I support liberal democracy. Democracy could be a problem. You know, liberal democracies are what we should be celebrating. And Israel is strong for two reasons, which is one is because it's somewhat a liberal democracy, and that has been challenged recently. And I hope Israel manages to defend its liberal democracy. And also because Israel is somewhat secular. Again, secularism is not black and white. It's a spectrum. And relative to its neighbors, Israel is very secular. Relative to, I don't know, France or maybe United States, it's not secular enough, but it is much more secular than a lot of other countries, right? And that's what makes it stronger. Again, the reason why it's important for you to say liberal democracy instead of democracy is because democracies don't guarantee you human rights and certain other standards when there are really horrible beliefs spreading among a population, right? A liberal democracy puts limitation on the rule of the majority. It tells the majority that there are certain things that it cannot do. It cannot dictate to the minority certain, anything that violates their human rights. You know, there are certain standards that every country has to, accept whether the majority likes it or not. And the liberal part of a democracy is part of a democracy that limits how democratic a country is. And that limitation is a good thing. And this is what's something in Israel that has been challenged recently because of the walls between the judiciary branch and the legislative branch being broken. And it's the legislative branch of a country, of a democracy, represents its democracy and its constitution, which Israel unfortunately doesn't have. And the judiciary branch is what limits that democracy. So it's the judiciary branch that represents the liberal part of the liberal democracy. And that is why so many Israelis have been protesting the recent changes in their government, because the liberalism in Israel is being challenge. And a lot of people try to use democracy as a way to challenge liberalism. So a lot of people say, oh, this is more democratic. This is more democratic. We are for democracy. Don't be for absolute democracy. Democracy needs to be limited. So always support liberal democracies over just absolute democracies. Democracy as a whole is not good. Absolute democracy is tyranny by the majority. But go on, Rivka.
So to your point about something that's democratic could not be necessarily liberalism, in the very first video, she mentions that the Hamas was democratically elected.
Mm.
And they
exactly
don't represent liberalism. They don't represent human rights for people. There's tons of people in Gaza who are not served by this government at all. That's a good point to make. And to your point about Israel being strong, yes, it's strong because it's a secular liberal democracy, but it's also strong because it had to be. I mean, upon their foundation, they were attacked by people, you know, war after war. They kept getting attacked. They're still getting attacked. So part of that is that Israel is strong because she has to be. If she wasn't, she wouldn't still exist. And the one last point is, I also don't appreciate the theocratic nature of what's happening to a lot of places in Israel. But as someone who grew up, who's you know, Jewish ethnically, yeah, I don't know what happened with the word there, brain fart, but and also families that suffered a lot from pogroms, you know, that's the reason why we're in the United States. It's important for me as a Jew to say that really most of the reason any Jew in the world is alive today is because their ancestors were either lucky enough to escape or get out or not be killed, or they were prescient enough to know when to leave. And so for me, I don't want it to be a theocratic nation, but like England has the Church of England is the church of the country, but they're not a theocratic country. For me,
it's symbolic.
Exactly. And so symbolically, anyways, it's for me as someone who is of Jewish heritage, who may need some place to go in the world. The Jewishness of it is important to me, but not like this, more like this.
Okay, so I'm going to make a comment on that, but Rivka, we are way over time, so I'm just going to quickly go over the other super chats. But regarding this, Israel providing being a safe country for Jewish people is not about religion at all. That's about ethnicity, right? So it's not Jewish religion.
Exactly.
So that is, to me, that does not violate at all secularism, right? If you notice, for example, that Yazidis or Black people or Kurdish people are being oppressed, and you give them a bias in supporting them because they are being attacked, that has nothing to do with violating secularism. That is actually completely in line with liberalism, because some group of people are being targeted for their ethnicity and you're providing extra protection for them. That's not a violation of any liberal values. It's not a violation of secularism either. You know, the bias is by the people who attack the ethnic group. You are just responding to that bias. You're not being biased yourself. Okay, so just let me quickly go through the super chat. So, okay, all colors, I looked up what he's referring to. Darvo is apparently deny attack, reverse victim, and offender. That's what it means. So all colors saying Darvo is a malicious manipulation technique used by narcissists and sociopaths and common among cults. I'll analyze it on my upcoming video. Which speaks of narcissism and the Israel-Palestine war. So, guys, check out All Colors' channel. So, All Colors are, I don't know how to read that one, entombed in black? Okay, is that entombed? Okay, you're muted, Rivka. All right, so let's go to the next super chat. I just had to check this, where this is from. This is from UAE. So, we got 250 UAE Emirati currency. So thank you so much from Border Wall. I appreciate that. That's like almost $70. Wow, that's a huge super chat. Thank you so much. I think this is the first super chat we got from the UAE. From Emiratis. I appreciate that. That's great. Thank you. Wow, guys, this just completely covered all our demonetization. This is, you know, so again, I mentioned to you guys that we've been fully demonetized for this stream. I mean, it says limited, but limited means almost fully demonetized. But now we don't have to worry about it. Thank you so much for Border Wall. This stream is completely covered now. Thank you. This is great, Rivka. We don't have to worry about the demonetization problem. With all these super chats, we could just now say whatever we want, and you know, we're covered in the super chat. You're muted. Yeah.
Oh, I'm muted on that. I'm not muted. Well, I was going to say we're free. Yeah.
Yes, we're free. All right. So two more comments. One by Gaijin American saying they were elected by plurality, not majority. Yes, when Hamas was elected, they got less than 50% of the votes, but they still had the most votes, but it was still not majority. So most, even when they did get elected, most Gazans did not vote for them even back then. Yeah, so that's a very important point to make every time. Thank you so much, Gaijin American. And last comment, which is a question for Rivka by Spiritualism for All, saying, Rivka, the necklace you're wearing, does that represent the Star of David? Because Rivka is a very hardcore atheist, so that's why people are wondering why she's wearing the Star of David.
Put this necklace on the 8th of October. I had to dig and dig and dig in all my old jewelry to find it. I put it on not because I believe in the God of Abraham. I actually reject the God of Abraham. I am an atheist, but I put it on because, as I said before, I'm ethnically Jewish. All the anti-Semitism that's out there right now and all the Jew hate and the anti-Jewish propaganda and actions by people, I wore it to symbolize that I sympathize with other Jews, that I am a Jew. There's a friend of mine who started Muslimish, Ibrahim Abdullah, said once that when he's amongst Muslims, he's not a Muslim. But if Muslims are being persecuted, he would be persecuted as well because he comes from a Muslim heritage. So that's sort of how I think about it. Although Judaism doesn't quite fit in that because it's a cultural and ethnic group. Judaism is about ancestry and choice. You're ancestrally a Jew or you convert and you choose to believe or you don't. And so I'm wearing it simply as solidarity with my brothers and sisters in Israel and all over the world.
So here's how I would how I think about it, Rivka. Let me know what you think. I think about, like, the history of the world is full, all religious, except quite recently, right? Not being religious, a lot of groups of people not being religious, a major part of the population not being religious, it's quite a recent phenomenon.
Yeah, it's modern.
So most signs associated with countries, with groups, many of them, not most of them, have some religious symbols in them. And as an atheist, when you want to support something, sometimes you use symbolism that has religious symbols on them. And there's no avoiding that. And you can't call these atheists to be hypocrites. What are you supposed to do? They are failed. And let me just give you one example. If you are a UK citizen, this is your flag, okay? That's a cross, okay? That's a cross that comes from Christianity, right? So if you're an atheist, you know, you want to show pride, you know, well, some form of nationalism, some support for your country, you wear this flag that has a cross in it. As an atheist, would that make you a hypocrite? Are you supporting Christianity because you're waving that flag, or you have a pin that has that flag? I mean, it's weird that so many people who want to support Israel or anything associated with that, when they use the Star of David, people call them hypocrites because they're atheists, but they don't do the same thing with, you know, citizens of other countries, which they have, you know, crosses or other things. And here's another example, right? Many Iranians who want to support Iran or who have nationalistic tendencies, who are not religious, they use this symbol, right? Because this is a Zoroastrian symbol. And they're atheists and they don't believe in Zoroastrianism. But again, this sign represents, the sign that says, which is Far Bahar, represents many people's, you know, especially because right now with the Islamic Republic of Iran, many of the symbolisms that is supposed to represent the country are Islamic. And a lot of people, a lot of atheists especially, don't like that. The symbolism that they use to try to represent their love for their country goes to ancient Zoroastrian symbols, even though they themselves do not claim to be Zoroastrian or believe in anything Zoroastrian related. They use these symbols. Again, this is not I don't find this any contradictory or hypocritical. I just see this as the signs and symbol that people have just historically associated with a country or a group of people. Yeah.
And also, I mean, just to make it even weirder and for people to understand, is you don't have to be a believer to be a Jew. So wearing this doesn't
right.
represent religion. It represents the nation of Israel. It represents the Jewish people. It represents my history, my culture, my ethnicity. So, yeah, I and also, if anybody can see, you can't see, I also wear the chai, which means life, because that's a very important value. And also, you know, I like to rep life.
Yeah, same. All right, guys, make sure you like the stream. We've been way over time, so but I think it was an important stream. And, you know, there were 240 people watching live, which is great. Make sure all of you like the stream before you leave. Your likes really help us get this message in front of more eyeballs. Every person, you know, it doesn't cost you anything. I know so many people supported us financially with Super Chats today and membership, and I thank every single one of you. We do need that. We're spending so much time making these streams, and they're all getting demonetized. So your Super Chats help us to continue to spend more time on these streams. I appreciate all of that. But for all the people that cannot spend any money or don't want to spend any money supporting us, just like the stream. That also helps. We wouldn't be asking you if it didn't help. Just but you have the power by just spending half a second pressing that like button. A couple of more people are going to see this content because you decided to hit the like button. So please go ahead and do that before leaving. Anyways, thank you so much, Rivka, for spending the time and digging all these clips and sending it to me for us to be able to come and discuss it here. I seriously don't know how I would do this without you, without Susanna, without Anna, and now without Roy. You know, without you guys, I'm doing so much that I wouldn't be able to go find these things. So thank you so much for doing this. I really, really do appreciate that.
And I thank you for the opportunity to come on here and talk about this stuff. It's really important. Thanks, everybody. Oh.
Wait, Rivka, we can't leave. We got another super chat. Thank you so much from Kote, I don't know how to pronounce that, from Canada, $10 Canadian, saying, you may have answered this already, but how on earth do you get rid of Hamas when they are billionaires in Qatar? It's like a cancer that hits from afar and grows again. Honestly, I don't think we will be able to get rid of Hamas because Hamas is an ideology. You can't destroy that with the military. But I think if you want to reduce its power, it takes long-term investment in trying to figure out a way to stop the brainwashing of children in Gaza and somehow bringing economic prosperity to the people in Palestine. I think you have to fight it ideologically and also reduce the hardship of people in Gaza somehow. I don't know how. We could do an entire stream on it. But again, you can't fight an ideology with, you know, I do understand that Israel has to attack Gaza because it has to show that it has deterring force to avoid more war from happening. So I am supporting Israel's military response in Gaza. But to defeat Hamas, you need way more than a military response. But go on, Rivka.
We actually discussed this very minorly a few shows ago where we talked about, you know, the way you get rid of bad ideas is better ideas. And one of the things we talked about, and maybe we need to do a whole live stream on it, is the education system in Gaza and even to some degree the West Bank and that. And then also, you know, just honestly, I feel like some bad ideas through economic incentives that raise other people's standards of living and give them opportunities that they might not have had, that sometimes opens up for people a way to look at other things. They have access to other places, other ideas, other people, trade and business. I don't want to sound like that's the end all be all, but I do think that increasing their socioeconomic level and then also changing the education system can really be helpful.
And you know what, Rivka, you need to, what else you need to do? You need to support Atheist Republic because we are reaching, I've been told, we reach a lot of people in the Arab world and in the Islamic world, and including a lot of people, a lot of Palestinians. So if, you know,
just
like the stream is one of the, yeah. So not just us, but us and channels like us. If we if online content starts providing a different narrative, a lot of people are convinced by these arguments that we're making and other people are making. So support, go ahead and go support content creators who you think that are changing the way these topics are being discussed. I think that's a major part of the solution. Anyways, I know Rivka has to go. Sorry, guys. All right. Bye, everyone. Thank you. Don't forget to like. Oh, we got another super chat. Rivka, you can go. Oh, no, it's for Rivka. Trell is saying, Rivka, maybe this will help. We Danes have the Norse mythology in our heritage. When the national anthem invokes Freya, which it's not religious. Okay, yeah, that's a good another good example. Thank you, Trell. Thank you. All right, guys. Bye. Don't forget to like. Bye.